Calling all benders and non-benders alike, dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ben Standing's with us. Why do you always play I'm Still Standing, Elton John, coming into Ben Standing's segment? I just kind of heard that for like the third straight day.
It's his intro.
It is?
Yes, because Denton played it before. And
I asked Denton,
I was like,
I'm just realizing this.
And this is what we play.
Well, Ben Standing's doing a lot more than just still standing.
That's true.
By the way, still standing kind of means that he's been standing all along very tall. And I think I've recognized that. I hope others are starting to recognize that. He had the Brian Robinson Jr. thing before anybody did. 53-man roster. Nobody does it better. We were certainly talking the other day, carefully, but certainly discussing the fact that no guaranteed dollars from Terry's agent meant perhaps the deal will look a little different when we get the actual numbers, which, of course, we've talked about it today. It does. Ben will be with us all season long, every Monday and Friday at 12, Mondays after games. And when they play on Monday night and Thursday night, and we got a lot of those things coming up, he'll be with us that next day as well. Where do we start? How about this? You think Washington should be interested in Taylor Heinicke as QB3?
I tweeted out yesterday that he was released, which I'm sure is what you're referring to. And I honestly just did it because he's Taylor Heinicke and he's a thing. And like, I wasn't doing it to be like, hey, Adam Peters, bring him back. But clearly that's how a lot of people took it, including people who we know who yelled at me for trying to instigate something. But I don't think Taylor Heinicke will be coming here, but hopefully he lands a job somewhere.
People were upset that you were trying to instigate something with just a simple tweet that said the Chargers released QB Taylor Heinicke.
Absolutely.
I love the games that everybody plays. No, I did. I just did a quick call segment. Of course, Sabah was on, you know, before the show started, hoping that I would do the segment on Taylor Heinicke. You know, in all seriousness, he'd be a good fit for this group as a QB3.
Well, you know, all things being equal. Sure. I mean, you know, they want mobility out of the position, obviously. He certainly has that. We know the arm strength isn't there, but, you know, Cliff is good at, you know, conjuring up plays to, you know, work towards the strengths and weaknesses of the quarterback. The issue is, in the short term, is why Josh Johnson is here, I believe, because they got to let Mariota sort of ramp back up after missing most of training camp. They need somebody who knows the system. Johnson's been here. Yada yada. So that's why you wouldn't replace. I wouldn't think you would replace Johnson with almost anybody for now. But if in 3 weeks Mariota's good, then who knows?
What do you think Mariota's going to be for next Sunday?
Well, you know, again, like with all these injuries, they're suggesting that he is heading in the right direction. But I guess, you know, he just hasn't practiced, so it's not that maybe he will be fine by week one, but you still have to take these steps to get there. It's like, you know, it's asking, you know, is Terry going to be able to play his usual amount of snaps week one? I don't know. We have to see where he's at with his football conditioning over the next, you know, he's got less than 2 weeks to get ready for week one in that regard. So I could sit here and say, sure, but until they see him out there in the practice field, you know, they won't know for sure what he can do. So I think it's just the same thing with Mariota. Not to say he won't be ready for week one. It's that until they definitively know he is, they have to have some sort of insurance.
All right. Give me your overall thoughts on where we are with the 53-man cutdown. Obviously, it's always a dynamic situation between now, even in the first couple of weeks of the season. But first, what'd you make of how they got down to 53?
Well, I'll just say broadly, you know, I mean, it's clear that the roster has improved in several areas, right? We've talked before about the cornerbacks, just massive difference from where they were a year ago at this time. The defensive line certainly is deeper than it was a year ago. Now that Terry is back and Noah Brown is able to get back, you know, Deebo Samuel has been really, really good this summer. So now you've upgraded at that role with Deebo Samuel, and now, you know, they have much more upside at the receiver position they did a year ago. Not to mention Jaden's got another year of experience, et cetera. So all that is important. Now, in terms of what really kind of happened yesterday, I think the biggest thing, and this is not just for Washington, this is kind of league-wide, I'm looking like, this is an incredibly uninspiring group of cuts. Other reports.
Yeah, I agree. I mentioned that for a cut-down date, there weren't, like, major headlines. Like, the headline at one point yesterday was Tommy DeVito got cut. I'm like, what? That's breaking news worthy? But it kind of speaks to kind of a benign day, comparatively.
Yeah, and even when you say, like, well, look, you know, there may be some sneaky talent out there that we just don't know about that scouts
right.
do, but I texted some, you know, folks this morning with different teams, and, you know, my basic text was kind of what I just said to you. Boy, what an uninspiring group. And one personnel executive just sent me back, you know, a bunch of exclamation marks. Another one was just like, yeah, this is pretty vanilla. There's nothing really here. And I say that because I thought at first, I was like, boy, is this a sign of Washington just really didn't have nearly the depth that maybe we all were discussing, you know, throughout the summer to a degree, that they would have some tough decisions? Because I don't know that there really were tough decisions. But it's not just them. I think league-wide this was the case. I don't know exactly why, other than maybe teams are just getting better at assessing who they need to keep. Or I also think there's a lot of veteran free agents from the sort of the middle class who weren't even in camps and will probably start getting signed soon, and maybe that aspect played a role here. But in terms of Washington, like, so I got 51 of 53 out of my projection. I'm not saying that to be like, oh, well, that's a good number. I'm saying that because the only things I got wrong were two defensive linemen. I had Jalen Holmes, Carl Davis in. They went with Eddie Goldman, and then obviously keeping Josh Johnson. For me, it was like there's like 14 defensive linemen for 10 spots. They only kept 9. Everything else was fairly obvious. And again, I'm not saying that because I got it right. I'm saying that because of what other options were they going to do? I never thought they would keep 6 receivers because they barely have 5 right now that you feel completely comfortable with if you needed to start a game. The, you know, the 4 tight ends, that seemed pretty logical. 5 cornerbacks, sure, maybe they could tack on a 6th, but again, who was that person going to be? There was nobody that was particularly obvious, and so on. So, you know, I guess it's like it wasn't a lot of drama. There weren't nearly the decisions that had to be made that I think we typically see, even for, you know, when this team was bad, there's always some decisions at the end, like, ooh, what are they going to do? You know, Brian Robinson getting traded the week prior, that was the big deal, but that already happened. So it wasn't much drama there, and, you know, I think it was all pretty straightforward for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, if we got from Dan Quinn and Adam Peters where you were 3.5-4 weeks ago to where you are now, what player on that final 53 man was a surprise? Like, I guess it would be someone like Kehoe or maybe Jacob Martin, but I can't come up with anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, Kehoe would be an obvious one, undrafted free agent. I don't think I had him on any of my projections until now, until this last one, but I did have him on my last one. You know, to a degree, Bill Krosky Merritt, I mean, he was a draft pick, but he showed some good things back in the spring, but it wasn't until training camp that when you watch him day after day, you're like, oh, there's something interesting here happening. You know, Chris Rodriguez probably doesn't make the roster if Brian Robinson is still here, but he also had to show that he was worthy of being on the roster. I think he did that over the course of the summer. But yeah, beyond that, I there was nothing really interesting. You know, they even brought in like a George Fant to take a roster spot
right.
because they were like, you know, they kept coming up like one body short at on the offensive line. So yeah, there really weren't, you know, any surprises. You know, last year when Colson Yankoff made the team, I was kind of like, whoa, okay, I didn't see that one coming. this year, I don't think there was any of that.
So how do you respond to the fact that Washington's average age of their 53-man roster is at 28.1 years old? It's the first time that any team has been an average of 28 years of age or older for their 53-man in the last 12 years.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's pretty fascinating. So my view on this, and this stems back to, we're not going to get into it, but the whole notion of, are they all in or whatever. This roster lacked so much depth or talent that when it went inherited,
right,
that in order to fill in the gaps, they had to get guys who could produce immediately. And also from last year, that was about building the culture. So all these vets, whether it was Bobby Wagner or other guys down the line, they were brought in for a specific purpose to help that aspect, as well as give you some sort of immediate contribution and you'll worry about the long term later. They ended up going with the same approach this time. You know, they made a couple of trades that took away some draft picks. And so I think it is, again, more of a short-term fix. And I think because they had the success they had last year, it wasn't like Peters or Quinn could say, well, we don't have to go. We don't have to kind of, you know, try to stay in the contender lane, because if you're a 7-win team, you're not even there. So I think they had to be like, well, what do we do now? How do we stay here? So they had to bring back a lot of the guys that they brought back. And then plenty of the other additions were guys who were typically, you know, more experienced on the older end, one-year deals and so on. So this will be something we'll have to discuss for next year. But for now, yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. The scary part is, if you're going to pick, not to be an ageist, but if you're going to pick a group that's going to be more susceptible to injuries or a steep decline, the 30-plus year old players are the ones. Of course, guys like Bobby Wagner, Zach Ertz, they're not showing signs of slowing down based on last year, but these things happen. We just had this whole conversation about why Terry McLaurin, turning 30 was a big deal. There's 21 guys in the roster, I think, who are 30 or plus this year. So they got a lot of guys there's going to be some questions about potentially.
We can get Jan Levinson Gould to come in and explain ageism to us if we want that to happen. I know you remember the episode. We are talking, of course, to Ben Standig at Ben Standig on X on Twitter. Ben writes on Substack. I'm a subscriber. I would urge you guys to be as well. I guess, there's always the possibility some big ad. We saw Noah Brown last year. What are the chances it happens again? And then what would the position be?
Well, I think it would be the same position. Again, the rub is, just looking at the list, I don't know that there's anybody out there Noah Brown seemed very obvious last year. I had already heard, back in free agency that they were interested in him, but he ended up staying with Houston. So there was already that notion in my head, but I think a lot of people picked up on that because Noah Brown had had some success in the league already. Martez with Valdez-Scantling is out there. I'm pretty sure he's going to go with another team. But I talked myself into thinking, could he be the De'Ami Brown this year? Just tell him to run go routes and Jaden will give you the ball. So maybe you can find some players with specific talents that you think you can exploit and not worry about them being like a full-dimensional type of receiver. But again, the list was either a bunch of guys who were past their prime or a lot of slot guys that they don't really need is the kind of how I was looking at the board. In terms of other positions, sure, I'm sure there are players who are out there who may be arguably better than somebody they have here at the bottom of a depth chart, but I don't look at this roster and think there's somebody that has to go. Like, why is this person here? The you mentioned, the secondary. I think all 10 of the defensive backs to me are worthy of staying, and I doubt there'd be somebody out there who is better than what they have. Is there better defensive tackle than Eddie Goldman? Maybe, but I don't think that's like a screaming need. So I think to me it's kind of receiver or bust, unless there just happens to be somebody out there that Peters or Quinn or someone else on the staff either knows or just happens to love.
All right, let's finish up with, we now know the details of the Terry McLaurin contract. I've discussed it a lot. The team has to feel pretty pleased. You've done some really good reporting with this, by the way. Ben, in Substack columns this week, reported that the first offer by the team was basically a 25 AAV deal, and that Terry was asking for north of Justin Jefferson money, which would have been more than 35 per year. I think Diana Russini discussed 40 to 41 Jamar Chase territory. But we now know that this deal is essentially $44.65 million guaranteed. I'm sure you would agree far less than probably what they were looking for. What's your take on now seeing this deal and all of the details to it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, first off, great for everybody involved that the deal got done. The team obviously needs him to play, and if he has a goal of winning a Super Bowl, you can't get that if you don't play, and now he can do that, and we don't have to hold a bake sale for Terry anytime soon. He's got good money. But in terms of the actual what we've been discussing for the last umpteen weeks, yeah, it's a clear win for the team. I see people out there keep pointing to the $29 million AAV, which is already less than the $32 that was being discussed yesterday. And like you said, when you look into the numbers, it's $44 guaranteed, and there's no guaranteed money at signing beyond 2026, which really means that they can cut him after the 2026 season, and they take a modest cap hit, but like basically it would be like half of his $34 million cap charge that year, and they could get out of it right then if they wanted to. And what's key there is going into 2027, that is when Jaden Daniels' extension, it becomes extension eligible. And I'm sure they do not want to put money on the books if they don't have to, so that they can have as best they can, free reign to plug him in, not have to cut a bunch of contracts to make it work and so on. And so, yeah, I mean, look, if Terry continues to produce as he did a year ago, they'll have no issue paying him.
Exactly.
But if in fact, the age 30 thing proves potentially accurate and he starts to slow down even just a little bit, they can gotta get out of the deal. So, look, again, I'm not trying to, crush Terry or his side, but when I see people saying that Terry got won this or Terry got paid or all these things, relative again to what we've been discussing for the last weeks and months, no, he didn't. He got a lot less. Like AJ Brown, he and AJ Brown both signed deals that on paper are 3 for 96, but AJ Brown got $84 million guaranteed. That's a massive difference than this. So again, Terry's fine, his family's fine, all that, but in terms of the negotiation, to me it looks like a clear win for Washington.
All right, next week we can start to talk about predictions. Have you made one yet on season record?
Well, I keep, I know like the over-under is about 9.5.
Mm-hmm.
I keep sort of landing on 10 because I don't want to get yelled at by anybody. But, look, I think it's...
Why do you get concerned about being yelled at? I'll ask you next week for your definitive prediction, but is getting yelled at by people on social media going to drive part of your decision here?
Drives my whole life, Kevin. Haven't you figured that by now? No, I mean...
You don't think they're going to be very good this year. I kind of feel that.
I just think that I can't look at last year and just say stamp down another 12-win season. But this is why Jaden Daniels is so, so important. I know people understand this, but I don't know if everybody understands it to the degree they need to. As long as he's here, they have a chance to contend. Whatever else is going on, sure, you need good luck. You need the good defense, injury help, good injuries, whatever, or no injuries. But he gives you that shot. That's the hesitation. Without him, if it was just sort of average quarterback, of course they wouldn't have done what they did a year ago, but I would have far more concerns because of the tougher schedule, the good fortune they had in a lot of the games late last year. But with him, he can mask a lot of problems. I wish we had seen him more in the preseason only to sort of help that part sink in, but he would one drive, four plays, touchdown. So if he can extrapolate that, they'll be fine.
All right. Talk to you next week. Enjoy the weekend coming up in a few days. This is the last time for about maybe 20, 21 weeks, you're going to be able to take a breath. Good work the last few weeks. I'll talk to you later.
Awesome as always, Kevin. Thanks.
Ben Standig, everybody. You can link to his Substack column at Ben Standig on X on Twitter. All right. Tom Brady, remember, he is part owner of the Raiders, which limited his access as Fox's number one analyst. Well, the NFL's jumped in and changed that. I'll explain what that means next.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tom Brady is the number one analyst on Fox's NFL coverage with Kevin Burkhardt. Also, Tom Rinaldi and Aaron Andrews are part of the number one team on Fox. If you recall last year, Tom Brady, as an owner of the Raiders, had limitations, including not being able to attend production meetings. These are crucial for game broadcasters. They meet with head coaches. They meet with key players leading up to the game at the team's facilities. They can watch the team's practice, etc. Brady was not allowed to attend those production meetings. The NFL is relaxing some of the restrictions surrounding Brady's role as Fox's number one game analyst. He will be allowed this year to attend production meetings, although his meetings with specifically head coaches and key players will be done remotely. They don't want him at practices, so he's still not going to be able to watch teams practice. But still, it's crucial that he have that opportunity. They relax the rules for the Super Bowl, for the Chiefs-Eagles Super Bowl. But yeah, they're going to do that. You know, I was looking at Washington's schedule. They are going to be the number one Fox team in Washington, in Landover, week one for the Skins and Giants, a week from Sunday. That is a Kevin Burkhardt, Tom Brady game. It's a 1 o'clock game, but it's a CBS doubleheader. And then it looks like they would be in Dallas week seven for Washington Cowboys, in Landover week 10 for Lions Skins, and then probably in week 16 for the first of the two Eagles games. CBS-wise, I don't think we're going to get a Nance Romo game. They're not in the 425 window on CBS. In fact, they're only on CBS this year one time. Scheduled right now, one time on CBS, and that is at Atlanta, week four. That's strange, but that's it for CBS games for Washington. So Nance Romo won't be, I don't think, doing a Washington game this year unless it's week four, and I'm just pulling up week four right now. Week four is a CBS doubleheader. No, it's Ravens-Chiefs. So they definitely won't be doing that one. All right, Denton is going to join us, and we're going to talk some college football. We'll do that after this. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
All right, some more NFL news breaking this hour as Rashee Rice is accepting and will serve a six-game suspension from the NFL to start the 2025 season per Tom Pelissero. The NFL and the NFLPA are working to finalize the settlement and set Rice up to return week seven against the Las Vegas Raiders. Some more breaking news out of the NFL as Kyle Hamilton has signed a new extension to make him the highest paid safety in NFL history. He is signing a four-year extension worth $100 million, including $82 million in guaranteed money, now tying him to Baltimore through 2030. Some more trade news from the NFL this morning. Adam Thielen is heading back to the Minnesota Vikings in exchange for a pick swap. The Jags have traded for Tim Patrick in exchange for a sixth round pick. He is already their tallest, heaviest, and oldest wide receiver at age 31. The Nats, they fall to the Yankees last night by a score of 5-1. Mackenzie Gore giving up three runs on three hits through five innings. Luis Gill, five innings of solid pitching, giving up only one run on 5 hits, including 5 strikeouts, looking to avoid the sweep. The Nats will wrap up their series against the New York Yankees this afternoon. Cade Cavalli taking on Max Fried, first pitch at 1:05. Nats on Deck with Charlie and Dave in just a few minutes at 12:35 on The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Denton's Office throughout all of football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
College football is underway. We had a game or four last weekend. Denton Day, my longtime producer, who is now a producer and a host on the BetMGM network. He's also the host of College Football Overtime on the College Sports Network on SiriusXM. And by the way, you hear him a lot on 980 and 106.7 The Fan. He'll be in for me. I've got 2 more days off. That's it for the summer. Back on the day after Labor Day, ready to get after it for the long haul of football season. So Denton's in for me tomorrow and on Friday. So I know that you and I, because we talk and we text often, we can't wait for this time of year and counting it down. I'm going to start by asking you something that I asked Stanford Steve the other day. Do you think on Saturday at noon, when Texas takes the field against Ohio State in the Shoe, that we will be watching the two best teams in America? They are ranked 1 and 2, not in both polls, but are those the two best teams in the country in your opinion?
Yes. Yeah. Right now, yes. I think that could change based off of the way that certain quarterbacks, you know, progress throughout the course of the season. But I would say right now, by the time we get to Saturday, yes, those are the top two teams.
Okay. So with that in mind, is Jeremiah Smith easily the best player in college football?
Yes. Yeah, by a pretty considerable margin, I would say. I think just generally, Kevin, I've noticed over the last couple of years, it seems much easier, and I'm not going to call it like fully easy, but it seems much easier for wide receivers to make a jump from high school to college and then ultimately from college to the NFL smoothly. So, yeah, I would say Jeremiah Smith, the way he played last year, I think he's only going to get better this year. So, yeah, I'd say he's definitely the best player.
Why do you think that is?
I think because the position is so heavily relied on skills and nuances, but you can teach those at a really young age. Like, for example, if you're playing tackle, eventually you're just going to have to beef up and you're going to have to face someone that's bigger than you. Whereas when you're playing wide receiver, you don't really have to. You can kind of hone the skills from a really young age, and then they kind of carry with you from level to level.
Is Arch Manning the best quarterback in America?
No. He'll be good. It wouldn't stun me if he gets to New York as, you know, one of the guys that's in the top 5 for Heisman voting. I wouldn't gamble on him to win the Heisman. You know, I know the preseason favorite rarely ever right. does. I would say that right now it's either Garrett Nussmeier or maybe Drew Aller as QB1 across the country. There are a couple other guys in that conversation, but it's not Arch yet.
I think this is going to be interesting this year. I love Sellers out of South Carolina. I've not seen it with Aller yet, but let's, you know, if he takes that big jump here in this upcoming season, the guy I don't get personally and all of the hype around him, and we've seen him projected in some mock drafts for 2026 as the number one overall player in that draft, Cade Klubnik. I don't get that at all. I like Garrett Nussmeier because of the experience, but I don't see him as like a starting NFL quarterback at any point down the road. How do you just sort of evaluate all of the top tier quarterbacks? And is there somebody that I haven't mentioned that you really like?
So I think I feel a little bit better about Cade Klubnik than you do. I don't know that I see him as a great, like, I certainly wouldn't draft him number one overall, but I think experience inside that offense, he played really well last year with a a Clemson team where talent-wise, they certainly weren't anywhere near the top of the country. Top in the ACC, definitely, but top of the country, they weren't. I think the one guy that you're probably missing that I think could be really good and make a jump from college to the NFL is DJ Lagway. Mm-hmm. At Florida. Yep. You know, Florida has another tough schedule this year. That just kind of seems to be the way that they have scheduled the past couple of years. But he's super talented, rocket arm. You know, the accuracy needs to get just a little bit better, and, you know, quick processing needs to get a little bit better, but so does everybody in college. I think with the gauntlet that he's going to face, if he comes out on the other side in Florida, it's like an 8-9 win team, is going to be because he carried them through most of the way. So he's a guy that maybe right now isn't looked at as a top, you know, 5 or top 3 quarterback in the nation, but by the end of it, I think he definitely could be.
You and I have been on different sides of Carson Beck. Not that I am in love with Beck, but whenever I've watched Beck, I think there is something to him. I think that's going to be an interesting fit. But the fit that, to me, is most intriguing of the guys off the radar a little bit, because I think this guy does look the part. I think Miller Moss with Jeff Brohm at Louisville is going to be a very interesting pairing. What do you think?
I think he'll fit better there than he will at USC. You know, Lincoln Riley has always been like viewed as this quarterback whisperer, but there is also a part of it to where he always had really, really talented quarterbacks, and he just had to put them in a good situation. I think Moss is going to be better, you're right, in that Jeff Brohm offense. And honestly, in the ACC, Clemson is so far ahead of everybody, but there is an avenue for Louisville to jump some of the other teams, your Florida States, which they're probably already ahead of, but your Miami's, SMU, I happen to think Georgia Tech's going to be good this year, but Louisville could jump a lot of those teams and be that second team in the ACC. Moss has a lot of skills that I think really translate well to the Jeff Brohm style of offense, and I think they'll make it a little bit easier on him in terms of what he has to do with the line of scrimmage and how he's viewing defenses to always have somewhere to go with the football. So I like the assessment of him. I think Louisville could be a surprise in the ACC.
We have a top four that includes Texas. For those of you that don't know, Texas is an SEC team. But the rest of the SEC, how do you see that shaking out?
I really like Alabama this year, and I think it's mostly because they're flying under the radar. You know, you have expectations with Georgia. You look at LSU, and Brian Kelly has a little bit more pressure this year than he has in years past. For starters, he needs to win opening weekend. They schedule really hard games, which is great, but eventually you're going to have to start winning those games. And on top of it, you left a program because you said, I can't win a national championship here. And while Notre Dame didn't win last year, they got to a national championship before you did with LSU, before you even got to the playoff. And he, you know, squandered our quarterback's really great year at LSU. So I think there's a lot of pressure with him. But with Alabama, Kalen DeBoer in year number two always makes a jump. He did it at Washington. I expect him to do it here. You know, they go with Ty Simpson at quarterback, who I think is going to fit kind of what he's looking to do offensively a little bit better. You know, Jalen Milroe was a hell of an athlete and a gamer for all intents and purposes.
By the way, real quickly, let me interrupt. Jalen Milroe made the team in Seattle, right?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Oh, that would have been, yeah, you talk about
that. Yeah, no, that would have been a headline. Around. But did he play well in the preseason? Did he get opportunities? I don't even know.
Yes and no. He played like a rookie quarterback that has a lot to learn. He just does not seem to have the pressure of like a Shador Sanders or kind of what Anthony Richardson had in Indianapolis, because they know he's not going to start right away. So there's like so much wiggle room there.
All right, back to your SEC countdown.
But anyways, I think Alabama is going to be really good this year, and I think they could, you know, sneak their way into the SEC championship game, and, you know, potentially, depending on how Texas does with Arch Manning and how he gets accustomed to playing, you know, really, really good SEC teams on a regular basis, Alabama could mess around and win the SEC.
All right, back to the ACC. A lot of people think Clemson, you like Texas and Ohio State, you think we're going to watch the two best teams in the country on Saturday at noon, but there are a lot of people that like Clemson this year and think that Dabo has a chance to win a national championship. Can they?
Yes, this is my national championship pick. I got them. That line has moved like crazy. I got them at 14, either 13 or 14 to 1. I think right now it's 9 to 1. At most books, the reason is pretty simple. You have a quarterback that is familiar with what you're trying to do offensively. While I don't super duper love Cade Klubnik, I think he's, you know, better than most people do. But really, if you look at Clemson, they are built in the trenches very similarly to how they were built in the trenches when they were beating Alabama in the championship.
Especially
you look back
that
at some
D-line,
of those,
right?
That D-line is crazy. Yeah, they got a bunch of dudes that if all goes well, they will be top 10 picks on that defensive line. So they have a bunch of guys that can go out there and play. And on top of that, they got really good wide receivers this year as well. So there's a lot going in the direction of Clemson that is much similar to like 2016, 17, 18 era Clemson, and not so much as like what we've been accustomed to recently with the 2022, 23 kind of boring Clemson.
All right. Big Ten wise, after Ohio State, do you like Penn State, Michigan, Illinois? How does your order go after Ohio State?
So I do think that Penn State will be, it'll be a battle between them and Oregon for number two. You know, we've talked about this a lot over the years. I really like Dan Lanning. I think he's a really good head coach, but their quarterback situation, I think, is really what draws me to them. In this era of college football where if I'm not playing, I'm leaving, somebody else will make room for me, yada, yada, yada. Dante Moore came to Oregon after they had gotten Dylan Gabriel last year, so he knew he was going to sit, and he was fine with it. So he sat for a year behind Dylan Gabriel, and now he's getting his opportunity. He was okay at UCLA prior to coming to Oregon. You know, you saw some ups, saw some downs. But I'm hoping that sitting for a year is really going to elevate his game. And because I like Dan Lanning, because they are one of those teams that kind of always replenishes with talent and speed, I do think Oregon could be a sneaky team to watch in the Big Ten, which sounds crazy because they won the damn thing last year.
Yeah.
But because of how, you know, Ohio State won the championship and everyone and their mother is loving on Penn State this year, I do think Oregon is a team to watch out in the Big Ten.
Tell me what you think of Bryce Underwood, the, you know, incredible, you know, quarterback that's going to be a true freshman, will start at Michigan. You know, you had the whole Portnoy and, you know, the whole flipping from LSU to Michigan on the commitment with a lot of money. Is he ready to play, and is he as good as people think he is?
I do think he's ready to play. I think he's definitely better than whatever they had last year, which is a major step up. I mean, if you look at what they did last year, they were still a halfway decent team despite the fact that they did not have a quarterback who could throw. And they were such a one-dimensional offense, and that one dimension was stacking the box and we're going to run it and see if you can stop it. And usually towards the end of the year, Big Ten team said, all right, if you're going to stack the box, we will just put 11 in here and you can't do anything about it. And that ended up working. I think he adds another element to this offense. I mean, they have a lot of problems off of the field, as I'm sure you are very much aware of, and the listeners are as well. They got a lot of things dealing with the NCAA. But I do think Bryce Underwood is the, certainly the best quarterback they've had since J.J. McCarthy, talent-wise. And I'm excited to see if he can put that talent on paper to use on the field.
Is there any love for Iowa this year? And I say that because they, I think, will be very good on defense again. I think they'll be able to run the football. And I think they actually have a quarterback this year that can throw the forward pass.
So, no. The love that you would think normally goes to Iowa on like a yearly basis in the Big Ten is now being directed to Illinois. You know, Brett Bielema's back, and Bielema's done a really good job since he took over.
This is year three. What year is this now at Illinois? Three or four?
Three or four, yeah. I think he's going into year number four at Illinois. They get Luke Altmyer back at quarterback. They won 10 games last year. So there's a lot of positives to build off of last year for Illinois. Now, it's a lot easier said than done. I mean, how often do we see teams have a really good year one year than the next year because of a number of different reasons? Ball doesn't bounce one way. A guy doesn't play as well as he did the year prior, what have you. And they kind of stumble. I mean, Michigan State a couple of years ago was a great example of that with that Kenneth Walker team that win like 11 games. And then Mel Tucker's gone in 18 months, right? I don't think that's going to happen to Bielema, but a lot of the hype that normally goes to your Iowa or like your Wisconsin is now being directed towards Illinois potentially being a surprise in the conference.
Who's good in the Big 12?
Everybody and nobody. Once again, it's going to be just a bunch of teams beating up on one another to the point where you could get a team that goes 11-1 as a champion, or you very well could get a team that's 9-3 as your champion. I am partial to Arizona State. I really like their quarterback in Leavitt and another year with Kenny Dillingham. But I also, we saw a lot from Iowa State and the resiliency. And on the other side of that, we kind of were let down by Kansas State outside of Avery Johnson. One, he didn't do enough to win that football game, but they didn't really have anyone else after Dylan Edwards went out. So there's a depth issue with some of these teams. I lean towards Arizona State, but that conference, like it was last year and years prior, it is a madhouse. Anyone could win on any given Saturday.
Of the non-powers, is Boise still the class?
For right now, yeah, they are. We'll see as the year progresses. I mean, it's not local, but it's kind of local, depending on how much you want to stretch local. But James Madison could be really, really good this year. And, you know, coming out of the Sun Belt, I think the Sun Belt, generally speaking, yeah, gets a little bit more respect than most other Group of Five conferences because that conference just has a history. It's not, if we did like a power 4.5, they'd probably be the half. So I do think if James Madison has a good year in the Sun Belt and Boise struggles a little bit, which I would imagine they're not going to look as good without Ashton Gentry. So if they struggle a little bit, it could be James Madison that jumps them at least early in the season. And then, you know, once you get deep into the year, who knows?
All right. Give me a team. We're talking to Denton. Of course, will be in for me for the next 2 days and then back at it for football season starting on Tuesday after Labor Day. Denton is now a host and producer on the BetMGM network at The Denton Day on X on Twitter. He does a lot of Washington football team stuff, produces a lot of short, very informative videos. We can talk a little bit about our team here in a moment, but I want the team or teams that you are touting, that you've got a real strong hunch that are a bit off the radar, are going to make a run at a playoff berth.
I got a 7-1 ticket on Nebraska getting to the college football playoff. That is the team that I have been the most passionate about this offseason. You get Rayola back for another year, and, you know, his weird relationship with Patrick Mahomes aside, he's a super talented quarterback. And I think Matt Rhule in year number three, if you look at what he was at Temple from year number two to year number three, it was a big jump in wins. And if you look at Baylor from year two to year number three, it was that big jump in wins. That was the year that got him that job with the Carolina Panthers. So year two to year three is usually where he makes the big jump. Year three is this year. You got a five-star quarterback in Rayola. And if you look at their schedule, outside of Michigan and Penn State on that schedule, all those games are winnable. And it's not even to say that the Michigan and Penn State games aren't winnable. You know, who knows how the quarterback plays, but all of those games are winnable. That's not to say they will win all of them, but I wouldn't stun me if they walk away with a win against a USC or an Iowa to close their season, so on and so forth. So they got a really easy schedule. They're really talented. It wouldn't stun me if they get 10 wins, and a 10-win Big Ten team is getting into the college football playoff every single year, especially now that we're at 12. So I got a ticket on Nebraska to make a run to make the playoff.
I kind of like Louisville. I think they're going to be a part of my futures plays here coming up. I like the combination of Moss and Brohm. They play, obviously, Miami and Clemson on their schedule, which will give them opportunities. They also play, I think, Madison early, which will be an interesting matchup. All right, week one here, full week one. Any sides stand out? Who do you like?
So my gut feel hates this play. The contrarian model that I have been subscribing to since you and I started working together loves Miami against Notre Dame. You know, I looked at it on Sunday, and Sunday is not the right time to look at these because so much money comes in throughout the course of the week. But on Sunday, on a particular app that I was using, it said that the money was 90% in the favor of Notre Dame.
And Miami is going to be definitely an anti, you know, public side, no doubt. And that line's been sitting there at like that 2.5 number for a while. They're just continue to invite more Notre Dame action.
Exactly. So we're going to jump on Miami. I don't really like Carson Beck that much. I don't really like Mario Cristobal that much. But because the number is so lopsided, I mean, that's why I was on Iowa State week number zero when that one cashed out. So I'm going to be on Miami.
Okay. Thoughts about 53-man cutdown, Terry contract, anything that you'll be talking about, you know, tomorrow on the show, or maybe you guys were talking about on your show this morning?
So I guess that $32 million AAV wasn't quite accurate, huh?
No.
Who would have seen that one coming? Look, yeah. I'm happy for Terry. And, like, today is the day if you want to do victory laps on whatever particular side you are in terms of, you know,
Adam
Peters.
Well, there was only
one
victor in the negotiation.
Well, there's only one
victory,
right?
The team got
right,
a really good deal.
If you want to do those victory laps, like, now is the day to do it, and then tomorrow it's all about the Giants. It's all about week one. Like, I don't want to hear any of this, oh, the team won. Like, I don't care about that tomorrow. Today, sure, because I got criticized when the deal came due, because I was saying, Kevin, I was like, I think it's going to be $28 to $29 million. We'll see what the guarantees are, and that's exactly, you know, what it ended up being. But I'm just ready for week one. I'm excited to see what he's going to look like with Debo in the offense. I mean, you know, Debo has looked really strong at camp, and it's a lot more than just like your bubble screens that he ran in San Francisco. I think they're going to expand his route tree a little bit. So, you know, getting to see Terry and Debo and, you know, hopefully Noah Brown week number one, if he's healthy, and Zach Ertz, who is just, I mean, Zach Ertz is so good at getting open at that spot. Athleticism is maybe not the greatest anymore, but his route running nuances are just spectacular. I'm really, really excited about what this offense is going to look like, and I'm just glad that, you know, we got all of that nonsense behind us, and, you know, we can focus on actual football now.
Doc refers to Zach Ertz as Jaden's binky. I love that. And by the way, it's apropos because he really is the go-to guy, and he gets still at his age. He is crafty in his ability to separate and catch the football. All right, one last one. We're going to have you on. Denton's going to come on during the college football season. We're ironing out details of time and date, but we'll probably do something on Thursdays during football season with Denton coming on and doing the college football segment that he did here as a part of the show for several years. But if I don't have, you know, we'll do something next week, obviously, but I kind of want your over under right now at 9.5 on Washington season.
Over. I feel pretty confident. You know, I know that the defense is still questionable, I would say, and especially that defensive line. It didn't look great in the preseason, but also who cares? It's the preseason. I want to see that defensive line get better, but, I mean, good luck stopping the offense. When you got five, I'll take five over literally anybody at this point in the NFL. So 9.5, I will take the over on the 9.5.
I think I'm going to be with you on that. I really feel like maybe it's not 12, but it's double digits again. Of course, it's contingent on health at the quarterback position. I'm sorry?
Is your passion officially back? I worked with you for 3 years, and you constantly said the passion is not quite there. Is it back now because of how good Jaden is?
Well, I mean, you know how invested in Jaden I was.
Right.
So from that standpoint, of course, I'm also invested in the team being good because it's better for all of us that do what we do. Do I still feel it? Or do I feel it today like I felt it 10 years ago? It's different. It's just different. But I'm going to enjoy the throwback uniforms. I'm going to enjoy those uniforms becoming the permanents, we believe, in 2026. I think that will certainly, you know, I know some people think it's silly. Most of us understand why it's not. But yeah, I'm really pumped up about a season in which we're going to have so many, on paper right now, so many heavyweight anticipated matchups. And I'm talking about beyond this city. I'm talking about league wide, starting in week two, you know, on a Thursday night at Lambeau. That's a hell of a Thursday night game in week two. Could Micah Parsons be a Packer by week two?
I'd have to give him a hell of a deal. I hope also that Terry shows up to his press conference in that throwback 17. We haven't seen a picture of him in it yet. I want to see him in the 17, the whites.
Good advice. That'd be really good advice. All right. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it, as always.
Yeah, I see you.
All right. Denton Day, everybody. He'll be in tomorrow and Friday. I've got those 2 days off. By the way, Kyle Hamilton, you know, the Chris Olave trade back, Dotson, Cole Turner, Sam Howell, Brian Robinson Jr. playing chess over checkers with the Saints. Kyle Hamilton was there. Kyle Hamilton just reached an agreement with the Ravens for a 4-year, $100.4 million contract extension. He becomes the highest paid safety in the history of the game. That was a frustrating draft. Look, I didn't I thought that Jahan Dotson could play. So I didn't mind picking up some extra picks and getting Jahan Dotson. I didn't think he was Olave. I didn't think he was Drake London. And I'm still convinced had Drake London been there, that would have been the selection at 11. But the guy that I wanted in that draft at 11 was Kyle Hamilton more than anything else. Kyle Hamilton is a monster in this league. And the Ravens just made him the highest paid safety in the history of the game. Yeah. Jahan did make the Eagles, right? I know that they picked up another receiver, but he did make the final roster, I'm assuming. That would have been a headline.
Oh, we would have heard about that if he didn't.
Yeah. Jamin Davis got cut by the Jets. And Taylor Heinicke got cut by the Chargers. All right. I'm off the next 2 days. We'll be back on Tuesday. Enjoy Labor Day weekend. Enjoy all the college football. Next week will be a power-packed week leading up to week one of the NFL season. Giants Skins will have all of our predictions. Next week, I'll give you all of my season prop bets. Next week, we'll have Washington's predicted record with footnotes. Max will participate. Looking forward to that. Chris Russell's next.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar, Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.